And we're very glad and proud to welcome, as we mentioned earlier, Sunday is Veterans Day, although it'll be mainly observed on Monday. And kind of in line with that, we've got a couple of veterans right here in our studio. And they happen to be man and wife, which I think is a little bit unusual. And that's Lenny and Leonard Sabagna. Welcome to you both. Nice. Thanks for giving up a little bit of your Friday evening to be here.
Well, it got us to invite me out or invite her out to have a chicken dinner tonight.
There you go. So it worked out pretty good, Lenny, huh?
Right.
Now, first of all, I want to tell you, Leonard, what a great article it was in the newspaper about you today. And also congratulations on you are the kind of keynote speaker, main speaker for the Veterans Day concert up at the school on Monday. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I'm going to start with Lenny because I read an email that went out from Jim Boyd, I think it was yesterday, talking about the number of veterans in Cook County and whatever it was, I don't have it in front of me. But I know he also mentioned the number of men and women, and there was a pretty substantial number of women who were veterans, including yourself. What branch of service were you in and when?
I was a WAF, and I enlisted in 51 and served in 51 and 52.
Now, a WAF, for those that don't remember that, because I'm not too sure there's any WAFs anymore.
There aren't.
That was the Women's Air Force.
The Women's Air Force. There were so many different divisions. They had two systems with pilots. Mm-hmm. Those women flew airplanes to combat areas. There were two of those. And they also had a nurses group. And they took nurses, I think they put them in Africa in November in the war, the Second World War even.
Now, how old were you when you enlisted in the Air Force?
18.
Now, what prompted you at age 18, probably fresh out of high school, I'm guessing, or not long after, in college, to enlist in the Women's Air Force?
I really wanted and looked to the Air Force to get an education.
Oh.
I won 3 scholarships in high school, but my folks were very poor.
Uh-huh.
And we couldn't afford to take... I went to the University of Tulsa, and it was obvious that we weren't going to have any money to pay for it. So it was... That was what I decided to do.
And and I'm assuming that it did help you, in fact, get your education.
No, it didn't. Oh, it didn't. Got an education for my first husband.
Oh. Well, now, what part of the Women's Air Force were you in? I mean, what was your
There was a
job?
Time from about 48 to the late 60s when WAF was a separate part of the military.
Sure, kind of like WACs in the Army.
Yeah.
Yep.
And some of the WACs did become WAFs, but then it became the Department of Defense, and it was integrated, and women weren't divided into WAFs anymore. You were just in the Air Force.
Sure. And what did, when you were there, though, what...
It was a WAF. It was a new program, sort of.
And so what did you do? What was your role?
I was an X-ray technician at Sutter Hospital. Not Sutter Hospital. I worked at Sutter later, but it was the Mather Air Force Base Hospital in Sacramento, California.
Okay. And, of course, 51 and 52, that was the Korean War
was going on.
Were very many women shipped overseas as part of their service?
The pilots flew some planes. The nurses got to go. Our primary responsibility was to release an airman for active duty.
I see.
We were just mostly clerical or medical positions.
Uh-huh.
They didn't realize how good we were then.
I bet they realized it when you were done.
No, they opened... The services are wide open now, but our culture has changed.
You
realize that was 60 years ago.
Yep, you bet. And, of course, no other than flying the plane, like I say, no women in combat. Now, of course, obviously there are. I want to shift gears just for a second and ask you, Leonard. Now, I know a lot more about your military background because of the article that was in the paper, but how old were you when you enlisted?
Well, what happened is I got, everybody was drafted.
Sure.
And I was called up, took my physical, and I was turned down.
And what year was that?
That was in probably 44.
Okay.
And I had a hernia. So I went back to work, and I moved with my parents then to Minnesota. But while during that time, I figured I better, I don't know what motivated me to go into the service, but I decided I had to. So I went and got myself operated on.
Fixed the hernia?
For a hernia, mm-hmm. and spent a whole, at that time, a hernia was a serious thing.
Yeah.
And I spent a week in the hospital. And after that, I, the only way I could get into service was to volunteer to the draft.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to the draft board, told them I was ready to go in, and a month or two later, they called me up.
Hmm.
And I was called up then in January of 45, and I got out in November of 46. But I was in there when the war, when I went in, the war was still on. We were, I took my basic training, and then what, the first bomb was dropped when we were being shipped overseas.
Yeah, you were on the boat.
And no, the first bomb was dropped when I was on the train.
Oh, that's right.
Going from Sacramento to the POE in Frisco. And then I was on the boat when the second bomb was dropped, and that delayed our, we thought we were all going to go home now.
Turn the ship around and let's go home.
Yeah, no way. That was a scuttlebutt. But anyway, we ended up sitting in the boat for 46 days, I believe it was. Mm.
That's how long it took you to get across the
right.
ocean.
Right, and wow. Part of that time, four or five of those days, where we were tied up in Pearl Harbor,
mm.
but no one could leave the ship, and then we landed in Manila.
Hmm.
And
that's where you spent the rest of your time?
I was moved around different companies. The war was coming to, well, it ended. MacArthur hadn't yet signed the peace treaty. I remember we were in Manila when that happened, and with Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was shipped around, not shipped, I was put in different companies. I finally ended up in a chemical warfare company where I took my discharge from. And because we had what were called decon trucks, large six-bys with 500-gallon tanks on them, we did a lot of firefighting.
Oh, yeah.
And if there was a fire anywhere, we had kept the trucks filled with water, we'd go out there.
We're visiting with Lenny and Leonard Sabanya about their time in the service. And now, when MacArthur was there, did he invite you to the signing at all? Or did you get the chance to meet him?
No, the signing with Japan was done in Japan.
Yeah, right.
In Yokohama, I believe. But I did attend the changeover of the Filipino government.
Oh, right.
That was, the Filipino government was under, it was a territory of, mm-hmm. of United States when the war started, and they decided to give, when the war ended, to give the Philippines their independence, and so they had this big ceremony, and MacArthur was there, and I have pictures in my book. We were right at the bottom of the podium, took his picture. And Cordell Hull, I believe, was...
Oh, right, Secretary of State.
Right.
Yeah.
And like I told the woman the other day when I was interviewing her, I said what was impressive was when they lowered the American flag and raised the Filipino flag simultaneously.
Yeah. Pretty historic moment.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
Now, Lenny, you said that you spent your entire 2 years in Sacramento.
Yes, after Lackland Air Force Base.
Is that where you took your basic training?
Training.
Okay. Were you I know that you said you went in to try and get help with your education, financial help, obviously, with your education. But were you ever tempted to stay in longer than what your enlistment period was?
No, I wasn't.
It was time to go.
I had gotten married.
Ah.
And Norris Heisted was transferred to someplace in Georgia. And you could apply for a discharge and as if because you were married and be released honorably.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So when you signed up to go into the WAFs, it wasn't for a two-year commitment. It was for more than that?
I think it was for three.
Okay, but when you got married, you transferred, then you could, for crying out. Things changed. When I went into the service in 1968, I was already married. They didn't care. Leonard, you said something that struck me. You know, you said, obviously you could have avoided the service altogether because of your hernia. You chose to go have it operated on, and you made the statement, I just felt I had to go in. And I think people at that time period, that's the way most people felt, don't you? I remember my dad, one of my dad's greatest regrets was that he never was able to serve during the Second World War because he did have some physical problems that kept him out and they wouldn't take him. And this was a real regret for him.
Yeah, I know that a friend of mine was killed at Anzio in the invasion, and I don't know how that affected me. He was a high school buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I went to the local blood bank to donate blood, and they as part of the, you know, the hype about it is you can donate this in the name of somebody.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I donated in his name. And my wife and I, after I left the school system, retired, we traveled quite a bit. And we were in Anzio and went to look up to see if his grave was there. And the person that was in charge of the cemetery told me that we couldn't find his name. So he said, chances are the parents brought his body home.
Oh, I see. Sure.
And
sure.
So he wasn't buried there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what motive. It wasn't for education, although I got all my education
as a result of that. That was an amazing thing, wasn't it? The GI Bill. I mean, that really, in so many ways, not just with education, but for sure with education, but with home ownership and all of the rest of it. It was an amazing, amazing piece of legislation.
A lot of people criticize it for being socialistic as though that's a bad word. I don't believe that. Socialism, it depends. It's like anything else. There's good things and bad things about everything.
Sure.
And you can overdo something. Like right now, the argument is, some argument anyway, is capitalism isn't good for a lot of poor people. Mm. And they're trying to make an argument that the best way to, you need a little socialism. That's what food stamps are. That's what's happening out in New Jersey now and the East Coast. So I don't want to get political.
Yeah, let's try to keep it on Veterans Day. Either that or a quick run out and get a soapbox here for you to keep you on that.
No, you don't have to worry about that.
Now, Lenny, as you got out of the service and went on with the rest of your life, did you for a while or maintain contact with, you know, one of the things that I've always thought, even though we may have separation, is that some of the bonds we make in the service are some of the closest that we'll ever have. And were able to keep contact with people after your time in the service?
The only person that I really kept very much contact with was the doctor in charge of my department, Dr. Swindeman.
Uh-huh.
And I gradually lost contact with him, too.
I see. Now, when you moved, you got married and moved?
No. We lived in Sacramento until Norris's...
Oh, Right.
Tour of duty was over.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then we came back to Minnesota to go to school.
Ah. But did you follow up with the training that you had received in the service? Did you do any that type of work after the service?
It kept me working in hospitals.
Oh, is that right? No kidding.
But more clerical then.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very good. And again, I want to remind our listeners, visiting with Lenny and Leonard Sabania, spoke earlier about the band concert and Salute to Veterans that happens at the high school at, I believe it's 2:30 on Monday afternoon. This is, I don't remember, maybe the fourth or fifth of those that they've done. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful event. The whole community is invited. The band plays and does a great job. And Leonard, you'll be the keynote speaker. Did you want to let us know what you're going to talk about, or what do you want to make it a surprise?
No, they asked me to speak about. I'm not going to speak about my experience in the service, but I am going to talk a little bit about the honor flight. Which I
thank you for
took
reminding
part
me that.
In.
I wonder, first of all, what is the honor flight?
Well, the honor flight back in 2004. There was a doctor working in the clinic in Springfield, Ohio, and he was a former veteran, and he was taking care of World War II vets and Korean vets, mm-hmm. People like that. But anyway, in the conversations he had with the people, in 2004, they finished the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., and so he probably in conversation asked them, are you going to go? Well, I can't, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he found out there were a number of his patients that wouldn't be able to go because maybe they were too, the health thing or the cost and sure. stuff. So anyway, he got the idea. One day he asked someone, would you like to go? And he said, sure. Well, he was a pilot, had his own plane, and he thought about it. He organized a bunch of pilot friends of his with their planes, and they rented a plane too. A lot of pilots rent planes. And could we get together and take a group to Washington, D.C. to see the memorial and fly them back? And it's a short distance from Ohio sure. to Washington. And so they said, yeah. Well, anyway, that's how it started.
And since then, every year there have been flights now.
Right.
Obviously, this doctor doesn't come up here and fly people.
No.
How do veterans get to make that flight to the memorial?
It's still
World War II and Korean vets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although they're originally...
Oh, are they doing Vietnam too?
Yeah. Now, there were on the flight I was with, there was a few Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are getting older. And,
yes, we are.
Right. And so they're running out of World War II. World War II vets, I understand, from statistically, are dying about 1,000 per day.
Wow.
So we're losing them.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to get, the first choice was always World War II. But as the flights went on, and since 2000, well, actually, the first was in 2006 when they actually rented.
But like the veterans from here that have gone,
yeah.
do they apply to go or how?
No. Well, yes, there's an application mm-hmm. you can fill out, which I didn't know. I got a telephone call from Orvis Lunke.
Yeah, he's kind of the coordinator
right,
of it?
Right.
Right.
And he's a volunteer for the Northland honor flight.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also a guardian. And by the way, I'm getting up in years. I just had my 88th birthday, and I'm finding it a little difficult to walk long distances.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told him that on the phone, he said, don't worry. We have wheelchairs, and we have people to take care of you. And so they have guardians.
Oh, I see.
And the guardian... Actually, I got to thank Orvis because, and I told him this a couple of times, you know, I really appreciate him pushing me around
yeah.
on all of these memorials, because not only did we go to the World War II one, but we went to the Vietnam War, the Korean War, and we went to the
women's.
Oh, great.
Women's.
Now, did you go along too, Lenny? It's just the guys, huh?
Yeah.
I have an application in to go next.
Oh, you
next
do?
May.
Oh, great. Oh, so they do, they're taking women veterans as well.
Oh, there were quite a few women on the flight that was on.
Good. Well, I would love to keep on talking about this, but unfortunately we're running short of time. But I want to sincerely thank both of you, Lenny and Leonard Sabanya, for coming in tonight. Thank you also for your service to this country, and happy Veterans Day.